When the strange becomes reality, when the light becomes dark, when you open your eyes and the monsters are still there, that's when you want your family. Welcome to the safest place in the paranormal world, TAPS Family Radio. They're the family you always wish you had. Your hosts tonight are Tim Ellis of the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society of Michigan and Chris Perkins of the Atlantic Paranormal Society, interviewing the biggest names and tackling the subjects you want to hear about only on Jackalope Radio. They're not your average family, but I guess that's what makes them fun. Here is Chris and Tim.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to TAPS Family Radio on this Tuesday evening. It is another night of TFR. Thanks for being with us tonight. My name is Tim Ellis, and joining me this evening in place of Miss Chris Perkins, who could not join us this evening, I'd like to welcome Larry Moore to the show. Larry, welcome, my friend. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it. I know I got some big shoes to fill with Chris being gone. But, you know, I'm going to give it my best, and I think it's going to be a good night.
Oh, we know you're going to do fine, man. And for people who may not know, Larry is actually part of the TAPS family team. Larry is actually our promoter and our booking agent, if you will. He books our guests for us, and he does the promoting on the web and on Facebook. So he is part of the team. And also, too, Larry, you've also got your own show, too. So it's not like doing the whole radio thing here tonight is anything new to you. So what's the name of your show?
Paranormal Community Radio. It actually airs right after TAPS Family Radio tonight, 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. You can catch that at northonline.com. And, you know, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, you guys' show is so much more organized and better. I won't say better, but, you know, it's a lot more what's the word I'm looking for?
Anal. We're anal.
Yeah, there we go. You know, our show focuses more on, you know, it's a listener-based chat, or listener-based show, I'm sorry. So we talk about what the listeners want to talk about, and, you know, we kind of take a different approach. But it's a good show, and you know, I encourage everyone to tune in if you want. It's going to be a great show tonight. So, yeah, I'm just happy to be here.
Well, very cool. We're glad you could step in and help out. I know Chris really wanted to be here tonight because our guests this evening deal on a subject matter that is very she is very into, and we're going to get into some deep stuff here tonight. So we're excited about that. But we do welcome you to TAPS Family Radio here tonight. Thank you for being with us, and let's go ahead and get our evening started here today with some strange news. And Larry, you've got one that is, well, let's just say very intriguing. Why don't you start off with that one?
It's intriguing, and I'll be honest, it's borderline disturbing kind of, to me.
Good way of putting it.
What I have here is apparently there are genetically modified cows that are able to produce human milk. And this, I'm sorry, I still read it and it still amazes me.
Say it again, because you got to say it a couple times to get it through.
genetically modified cows,
yeah,
that produce human milk. Because, you know, I mean, obviously everyone knows that milk comes from cows. I mean, we learned that in grade school. But now, scientists have successfully introduced human genes into about 300 dairy cows to produce milk with the same properties as human breast milk. I guess the human milk contains a higher quantity of key nutrients that help to produce things that boost the immune system of babies and reduce the risk of infections. Well, milk's good for you, but apparently scientists have come to the conclusion that human breast milk is better, so they've figured, well, why, you know, make the formula or whatever, and decided to make cows that make breast milk from humans.
Interesting. I mean, more and more, this stuff is getting more and more like science fiction. I mean, literally, the stuff that science is figuring out and the stuff they can do. Just there's something very disturbing about the idea of human breast milk being inside cows now. But I guess that's the way
it is. Yeah, it's to me, you know, and I understand the concept behind it, that, you know, for years, formula milk and cow, regular cow milk, excuse me, has been criticized as being inferior, an inferior substitute for human breast milk for babies and infants and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But why not just leave it to the mom? You know, why not leave it to the humans to produce the human breast milk, as opposed to we'll just make cows do it instead?
And putting it in bottles, and you can buy it in your local supermarket. Yeah, no, I agree. Right. I agree with you. I mean, I think that's humans should be producing human milk. If you follow me on that one. Yeah, very strange. Here's the one that I've come up with that I found this interesting. Being folks who are in the media as ourselves. And I don't know if you've been following this or not, Larry, lately, but have you noticed there's been a few incidences lately of, like, news anchors and famous people on TV who live on the air have all of a sudden just kind of lost their ability to speak, and they've kind of gone and mumbled and talked gibber? Have you seen any of that?
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it. I'm sure there are videos flying all through the internet right now as we speak.
There is. And here's the weird thing. You hardly ever heard of anything like this happening. Once in a great while, maybe something like this would happen. In the last few months, four incidences of high-profile TV folks have been doing their job and all of a sudden lose the ability to speak or put a sentence together. And because of the frequency of the attacks, there are actual conspiracy theorists out there now circulating online who are blaming the U.S. military's supposed research into the using microwaves as a mind control weapon. And they're saying this is what's causing these folks to lose their ability to speak. Kind of,
you know,
yeah, go ahead.
The conspiracies are, you know, they're always full of holes. And it's like there's a conspiracy theory for almost everything these days. I mean, heck, if you would have went back a year, I'm sure there was a conspiracy about the government genetically modifying cows to produce human milk.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, I can't say that it's not true, but it's a little wacky to me. My question is, why would they do it? Why would the government try to do that?
Well, and that's a good question. America has never admitted to conducting such research. And the question is, why are they attacking these people live on the air? And that just happens to be the big hole in their theory. But I just found that kind of interesting, that the conspiracy theorists have now found something to go after again, because they like to find the new headlines like that. And another one that I found, and this is might be kind of interesting to our producer, Cormac, from his over in his neck of the woods, not right in his own country, but I know in the area of which he lives. We're talking about in this news article from Scotland. Get this. Teacher takes his kids out for PE class, for phys ed. They're getting ready to play football, our soccer, their football. And they do their stretches, and all of a sudden they start to hear these thump, thump, thump sounds. And they look around, not a cloud in the sky, but they are watching worms fall from the sky like rain. I mean, if this isn't weird, I mean, this just kind of goes along with the whole, all the weird things that have been going on in the world lately, like rivers running green and dead fish and dead birds falling out of the sky. This just goes right there with it. In Scotland, earthworms falling from the sky like rain. And the kids freaked out and all went back.
I can imagine.
Yeah. All went back in for class, and they were covering their faces and their heads as they're running. The teachers collected the worms, brought them to the science department, and as of right now, there's no rational explanation as to what caused the worms to fall.
Well, you know, I remember reading, and of course, I'm not sure if it's actually true or not, but there's that whole story about it raining fish, and that somehow clouds and a storm had collected fish out of the ocean, and was in the atmosphere in clouds. And then when it started to rain, the fish rained from the sky with the rest of the rain. I mean, I'm sure most of us have heard about that.
Yes.
I don't know if it's true or not, but how would that apply to earthworms? I mean,
yes,
earthworms come out of the ground when it rains, but I'm not going to say that it's not possible, but that is very weird that earthworms would just be falling out of the sky like that.
Right. And I've heard that. I've heard that too about the fish getting sucked up in the sky and then dropping with the rainstorm. But they said in this case, it was not a cloud in the sky. Not a cloud in the sky when this happened. Absolutely crazy. So, but that's the strange world we live in. Before we end this segment and come back with our Taps Family segment to wrap up this news segment here, this isn't really strange news by any means. This is just something I wanted to get out there over here in our little corner of the world in Michigan where I live. We're very excited. We just announced on Friday our second annual Michigan Paranormal Convention. Last year was our first one we ever did, and this is the second one. We're very excited, and the official website is www.miparacon.com, and that'll take you to the official website if you're in the area and you'd love to come to this event. We have got a huge list of presenters, and of course, some of the bigger names that are going to be here headlining. We've got Stephen Tango from Taps and Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters Academy. We've got Dustin and Barry Fitzgerald from Ghost Hunters International will be here. We've also got some of the other bigger names in the industry, such as Rosemary Ellen Guiley, John Zaffis, and some great authors like Jeff Belanger and Joshua P. Warren. It's 2 days. It's August 12th and 13th up in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. It's at Kuwaitan Casinos, and you can stay right on the location. Again, the website is miparacon.com. You can go there, and the schedule, the pricing, everything is there. Tickets start as low as $60, and it's going to be a great time. And if you're interested in coming to see some of these big names speak for 2 full days of convention, we invite you to the second annual Michigan Paranormal Convention. So we're really looking forward to that one. Here's the deal. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have our Taps Family Spotlight coming for you. We're going to be talking to Michael Watson from the Oceanic Ghost Research. We're going international tonight, my friends, because we are going to Australia to show you just how big this Taps Family stretches. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more from Jackalope Radio. It's TFR.
If you are in need of a professional, experienced, and confidential paranormal investigation at a home or commercial location, the International Paranormal Reporting Group is ready to talk with you. For more information about us and other services we offer, or to interact with team members and people just like you, visit us online at iprgc.com. That's iprgc.com. The International Paranormal Reporting Group is a proud TAPS family member.
Tired of wondering where to get the best ghost hunting gear at the best price? Wondering if you're being ripped off or if the product is high quality and can last the rugged life of a ghost hunter? Your fear and search is over. Creepy Hollow Gear is the home of ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters. Founded by Paul Bradford of Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters International, Paul wanted to create a place where all the equipment was proven and tested in the field. Some even built by Paul and his team, making Creepy Hollow Gear the only place you can get some of this equipment. Check them out for yourself at www.creepyhollowgear.com, where you'll find a place that is set up for teams and enthusiasts who aren't inclined to build their own equipment or kit. A site that has the top gear at prices a team on a budget can afford. A place where people can try new equipment and technology. That's www.creepyhollowgear.com. Ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters.
Drive me home, Mr. Strain. It's getting late. I've got to be up early in the morning. I've got a wedding to go to. Gotta eat and drink some beer. Talk to strangers about my career. a lot of explaining to do about that incident with you. Afternoon, the windscreen wipers only seem to hypnotize as they slide from side to side, from side to side, from side to side, as they scratch from side to side, from side to side, from side to side, from side to side, from side to side. Two to go, so hang on there. Just hang on there. I think we'll make those lights. I think we'll be alright.
From the La Brea.
Family Radio on this Tuesday evening. Tim Ellis and Larry Moore with you this evening as Larry is stepping in and filling in for Chris Perkins. And we welcome everyone to our show. And don't forget, you can join us on our website, tapsfamilyradio.net, where we have a chat room in there as well. So if you have any questions for our guests at all during the evening, feel free to put them in the chat room there as well. And they'll get to us eventually, and we'll make sure we read them on the air. So right now, we're very excited to welcome to the show tonight our TAPS family segment. And this is what's so great about being able to do internet radio, because it allows you to just, man, reach across the world and talk to anyone, anywhere, at any time. And that's why we're very excited to have Michael Watson on the show with us this evening from the Oceanic Ghost Research team. And they are a TAPS family team out of Australia, representing Australia. Michael, good evening, my friend, and welcome to the show.
Hey, good evening, Tim. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. Thank you so much. So tell us, first of all, what time is it right now over there in Australia?
Clocks have just changed again here. So it's now 25 past 8 in the morning. So, yep, it's an early start for me today.
But in the morning. Wow.
That's yeah, yes. Crazy. It's hard to get your head around, isn't it? It's early evening in the States, late night in the UK. And, yeah, it's... So it's Wednesday morning here, yeah, 25 past 8, yeah. So.
Yeah, we're representing all the time zones of, of the Earth right now with this show.
That's fantastic. It, yeah.
So tell us about OGR, Oceanic Ghost Research Society. When was it founded? How old is this team?
We're probably looking around 4 years in around about a couple of months' time, coming up about 4 years when we're formed.
Okay.
It was myself and a guy who I was going to bring on today, but he couldn't make it this morning. I just had work commitments, but a guy called Vlad Dubai. We sort of stumbled across each other, both had the same sort of interest and outlook, and we just sort of got together a few times and decided both had the same outlook and what we wanted to achieve and where we wanted to go. So we just put our heads together and decided to form the group. So that was basically it. It was just the two of us and Martin, who's Vlad's brother, for probably a year. So it was just probably the three of us. And then we decided to bring a few more people in, and we've expanded not greatly, but slightly. We've only got about 6 or 7 team members at the moment, and it's probably just enough for us. I think at this stage, you know, we don't really want to go much bigger.
Yeah, I know. There's two different schools of thoughts out there when putting your team together. There's some folks who like to do the real big teams where there's a ton of members, and then there's others who like to keep them small and easy manageable that way. Now, tell me, Michael. You know, because I know here in the States, the idea of ghost hunting, paranormal research, the whole ghost phenomenon has exploded over the last 7-8 years. I mean, it's just you can't find a night on television where there's not some type of paranormal research show on. But what is it like there in Australia? Are you guys having the same type of momentum, or is it just kind of catching on? What's it like?
It's nothing. I mean, I'm from the UK originally. I've lived here 5 years. That's why I haven't got an Australian accent. But just before I left the UK, it was crazy there. There was lots of different shows, and I know what it's like in the States. And I speak to a lot of people in the States. And look, you go on the websites, you can see how crazy it is. There's shows coming from every nook and cranny. Mm-hmm. I think it's a bad thing. It's causing a lot of disruption to probably real research that's going on, you know. However, it has spawned a lot of groups as well. But I would say here in Australia, it's nowhere near as bad as the UK or in America. However, there is a few more groups starting to form now. They are starting to show a lot of the American shows. More on the Foxtel service, which is the satellite service. They are there, but it's nothing like the States at this stage. Whether it catches up, I don't know. I really don't know. But it's okay at the moment. It's not too bad. There's not a mirror of groups out there. There's a handful of groups in Australia. So yeah, hopefully it'll stay like that. Yeah.
With all the teams that are across the world, you know, and you know, there's multiple associations that you could associate your team with. What made you choose to join Caps Family? What was your inspiration for that?
Initially, it was contact I probably had with a couple of people who were already members, and actually Cormac and Danny and Mary and from Scottish Paranormal. I used to just network with them guys pre-TAPS, joining TAPS. And it always appealed that, you know, joining that network, you know, it broadens your knowledge and your sort of contacts around the world. You know, you've got similar interests, and it's always good to see how people perceive things and how people tackle paranormal investigations. And you do pick certain things up from each other, and I think that's the whole part of the TAPS family network is the networking that you can perform between all the teams around the world, you know. And obviously, it's depending on which country you live in, it's different, you know. I mean, yeah, okay, America, UK, and Australia are all similar countries, but, you know, doing paranormal investigations is still different in each of them countries, you know. You know, you've got the influx of the TV shows, as you spoke about earlier, in the States and the UK, but it's not like that here. It's catching on, but yeah, it's still good to see the network, and it's not as polluted here, and you can sort of, you're a bit more freer to get on with it here, you know. You're not getting choked up in the system, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it, because you know, around here you can't. It doesn't seem like you can ride your bike around the corner without a paranormal team popping up and starting because of the popularity of the TV shows. And now over there, and if you're just joining us, by the way, Michael Watson is our guest right now for TAPS Family segment on TFR from the Oceanic Ghost Research Group out of Australia. How is it? Now, I mean, this just goes along with what we were just talking about, Michael. You know, the popularity seems to just starting to be catching on over there in Australia. But how is it perceived in just the public with what you guys do when you tell people what you do? I mean, is it accepted over there? Are people still kind of raising an eyebrow when they look at you?
I think generally people are, just in general in Australia, are really laid back anyway. No one really is too bothered about it, you know. And it's nice to approach places, and you don't have to try too hard if you see you want to propose an investigation. Most places I've found are very welcoming and open for us to come in and do what we want to do. You know, is I think if you approach it the right way, in a professional, courteous manner, then you know you can't really go wrong. You know, and people are sort of, oh yeah, quite interested in it and what you want to do. You know, so it hasn't been too bad. Look, I've seen the pattern when it does get too popular, that places sort of cotton onto it, and they can start charging groups and saying, well, you're not coming in because we've got 10 other groups wanting to come, so we want X amount of dollars off you. It's not like that at all, you know. It's quite sort of easy going at the moment. Probably not as many places to approach, but still a good selection. We're down in Melbourne. It's got a good bit of history for its short sort of duration of being a city, but it's, you know, it's 200-year-old, but still some good areas around here and in the state of Victoria where we can get into, you know.
Yeah, I got it. I mean, hearing that actually makes me, you know, jealous almost. And I don't know about you, Larry, too, because you know, over here, and like you said, Michael, some, you know, here in the States, some places are actually charging groups to come in. But even worse than that are the places that have just completely shut their doors to paranormal investigation now, because there are so many groups. Not all the groups are run the way they should be. Not all respect the places they go to. And there's some places that have had horrible experiences with paranormal research groups coming in and not treating the place with respect. And because of that, a lot of places have shut their doors to teams now.
Well, but this is the big problem. Unfortunately, there's a high majority or high percentage of the groups, let's face it, they just really want to go out and experience the paranormal. They're not really, that the main motivation is not to understand what is going on or understand the real research behind it. Mm-hmm. They just want to go out and experience it. And I would say a majority of that, that's the big problem that you're probably experiencing in the States. And it, look, TV shows, you've got to, you know, you've got to pin the blame on quite a few of them, but you know, they see what's going on there and think, yeah, let's get out there. You're going to experience this. Throw a few gadgets around, you know, and let's not, we don't know how to use these gadgets, but we'll take them out anyway. Mm-hmm. And this is the problem that's happening now. It does, unfortunately, you've got to disseminate to the general public that this is not the reality of it, you know. The reality of it is that there is genuine people out there who spend a lot of time and they want to understand what's going on, that they're researching the paranormal, you know, what's genuine, what's not, and trying to understand what's really going on. And it's very frustrating for groups out there who have to come up against these other non-serious sort of groups that are out there, you know. And that's a bit of a problem, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would say luckily we don't have to face that here.
And hopefully you never will. I because in the beginning when TAPS first came on television here and Ghost Hunters first came on television here in the States, it was around 2004. First couple of years, it was actually a great thing for this field. What happened, because it really opened up so many eyes and so many people to, you know, that it wasn't taboo anymore to talk about ghosts. Yeah. At least not as much, anyways. But the problem is in the long haul now, we're actually starting to see, it's really a double edged sword. We're starting to see the negative end of that as well. So
I've been preaching that for a couple of years now, that, you know, the paranormal shows on TV have a really positive impact on the field at first. Just like you said, Tim, I mean, it's now more comfortable to talk about. There's a lot more people wanting to get involved and do good research in the field. But now that it's been around, you know, the damage is starting to take place as far as people are getting involved in creating teams that, like you said, don't have the same respect and the same morals and ethics as some of us other teams do. Yeah. And it really makes it hard for the rest of us, you know, who are trying to do good research. And like you said, there's locations that are closing their doors completely to good teams who want to do some research because of they've got burned or whatever. One of the questions I had for you, Michael, was, do you ever, you know, being Caps family and having Caps associated with your team name, do you ever run into issues of people wanting you to come out and investigate and maybe fabricating evidence or experiences or whatever just because they want to be on TV? I know that there's a lot of teams around here in the States that have to deal with that, and I'm wondering if you guys ever run into that at all.
Look, we've had a handful of cases pass through actually from TAPS case manager over in the States there. You know, obviously they've seen the show and then they've contacted TAPS, and then being in Australia, it's obviously that's part of being the TAPS family. But look, I think it's not just with the TAPS family name and people associating with TAPS and wanting that to come round and being on telly in the fame. I think it's the same with all residential or people who contact you out of the blue. I've always said is don't just readily accept what they're telling you that what they're experiencing is paranormal. We're getting tighter and tighter now with screening people. We have one of the guys who if you jump on our website called Tony, he's actually a psychologist. We're using him now to put him to good use to for witness interviews, you know. He's basically found ways of you know, working out or asking the right questions, and you can. There's so many factors, psychological factors that can propound to what people may think they're experiencing, and it's a really good test to a pre-test or a predetermined way of finding out is this person experienced anything, or are they just sort of propaganda it, or they just, is it fantasy proneness or whatever, you know? It's we're just trying to get tighter and tighter, and not readily accepting residentials so easily, because we've gone out to so many and it's just been so disappointing, because people just want to believe what they want to believe. They just want to reaffirm their own beliefs and use you to reaffirm their own beliefs. So we try to really get it as tight as possible, you know? So, but yeah, I do know what you're saying. Probably not as much. We've had a handful through the TAPS family referrals, but we'll follow through on a couple of them. But yeah, I do know where you're coming from. Yeah,
we're talking to. Sorry, Larry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. If you're going to do like a promo thing, that's fine. Go ahead. I can wait.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead with your question.
Okay. Well, you said that you've only been in Australia for about 5 years, and
you're
within the first year you guys created your team, and it sounds really successful. Did you do any paranormal investigating with the team when you were back in the UK?
And, yeah.
Compared to the UK to Australia, is there a difference? I mean, is there more activity in Australia than the UK, or vice versa, or?
Fundamentally, it's the same same protocols, same things, you know. I wouldn't say there's more activity here, or more activity in the UK, you know. It's hard to say, really. It's not as widespread. The interest's not as widespread in Australia, I wouldn't say, as it was in the UK. I don't know why that is, but it doesn't seem to be, but I like it here. I like it because you can get on with it. You can just be quite there's quite a bit of anonymity sort of thing, you know. You can just get on with it, and no one really bothers you, and you can just sort of do what you want to do, you know.
Now, along those lines, Michael, by the way, Michael Watson is our guest from OGR, one of our TAPS, fine TAPS family teams from Australia. Now, you know, being from the UK then, as you know, there are some very famous, world-famous haunted locations there that are known all over the planet. Now, in Australia, though, and, you know, I have to be honest, I don't know of, you know, I don't know of a location that might be like a Lepp Castle or the Tower of London in Australia. Yeah. But obviously, you know, what are the big famous haunts there?
Well, the most famous ones, funny you should say that, because next week we're going to probably one of the most famous ones, and we're very excited because it's a bit of an annual trip. I don't know if you've seen, it's actually a place called Port Arthur Penitentiary, which is, it's down in Tasmania. Now, it's the old penal colony for when the convicts came over in the early 1800s. It's a huge penal colony for convicts. Now, a lot of it's derelict, but it was actually closed down in probably 1870, 1880, but it still remains. It's a huge tourist attraction. We're actually heading down there next weekend for a two-night investigation, which is going to be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it because just even the history of the place is great, you know. Mm-hmm. There's that place. There's the old Melbourne jail, but it's over. That is one place that is overrun by tour groups, unfortunately. But there's actually a place. There's another jail, old jail, which is in Melbourne, which we've been trying to negotiate access for a long time now, but we're just can't get through the red tape. Which is called Pentridge Prison. That's got a huge reputation of being haunted. There's a quarantine station in Manly, which is in Sydney. That's another famous place. And there's a homestead called the Monte Cristo Homestead, which is in New South Wales. That's got a huge reputation as well. Between them four, they're sort of quite famous haunts for Australia, I would say. Yeah, but definitely Port Arthur, I would say, is probably one of the most famous. Yeah.
Where would you say is the most haunted location of Australia?
Well, apparently I don't know if it's been self-propaganda, but either the Manly quarantine station or the Monte Cristo homestead supposedly is the most haunted location, but we haven't been there yet, so I can't comment or decide if it is or it isn't.
Very good. So what's on the horizon for Oceanic Ghost Research? I know you said you just got the big investigation coming up there. What else you got on the horizon for the team?
Well, we've just wrote a journal paper. We're trying to get that out there. Now, that's going at the Australian Institute of Parapsychology. Now, as I mentioned, Vlad Dubai, who's my co-founder, he's also part of the Australian Institute of Parapsychology. He's now on the board. So that's always been a good connection and a good affiliation that we've got. What we're trying to do is we're trying to create a database, a website database for teams around the world. Now, this is in its infancy at the moment, and it's an idea, an ideology of mine and Vlad's, and whoever else is who wants to come on board. But the way we see the future of paranormal research, in my opinion, is through data loggers, data logging the environment, and data logger systems. What we're trying to do is get a database of groups around the world to input data into this huge database of all different parameters of the environment. And what we're trying to do is get as much data together over the years, and then we're going to start doing analysis on the data to try and see if there's any correlation between certain environmental things such as, you know, even magnetic fields or space weather, ionization, temperature, whatever, as much as we can tackle as possible, you know.
I love it. Great idea.
And this is what we're trying to develop. Even Mr. Cormack there, myself and Cormack are trying to get something together as well, just doing some research. Trying to get together and doing some projects, which we will do at some point. Cormac and myself are trying to get together and do some stuff, even through Further Taps family as well, just to try and get some research going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the key for our group is the research side of things, you know, and that's what really drives me in this field, you know, and drives our group is really getting to the nuts and bolts and looking into the research side of things.
Right? And I think that's very important. I think sometimes the research end of it, the true research end of it, kind of gets lost sometimes. And again, that's kind of the benefit why I love being a part of the TAPS family, because we, the teams, get to we get to share our information among each other.
Yeah.
And share thoughts and ideas and theories. And when you've got a group of people that can do that, you're only going to benefit the field as a whole, you know.
Well, that's it. And one of the, I've said this a few times, one of the surprising things is, and what a lot of teams don't realize is, there's been research going on for years and years and years, back to 1882 when the London SPR was formed, and there's mountains and mountains and mountains of papers and research out there on paranormal, poltergeist, and even just parapsychology and psi phenomena. It's all out there. And if you just keep start digging and digging, I've been just enthralled and enlightened of how much stuff is out there and what has been discovered and which you don't really know about. And the only time you ever hear about anything is when it's on the news, is someone trying to sensationalize some fake photograph or something like that. And that's what people perceive. But the empirical research and evidence that's out there is quite outstanding. And you just got to go and look for it, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, Michael, just from the little bit of talking to you tonight, my friend, it's quite obvious to see that the TAPS family is lucky to have you and the Oceanic Ghost Research team as a part of it, because you've got the right attitude, you've got the right foresight, man. So keep up the great work over there in Australia, and thank you so much for taking time to be with us tonight.
Not a problem, anytime. I'll just give us a shout. Thanks for your help.
You betcha. There we go. Michael Watson, OGR, Oceanic Ghost Research, out of Australia, a very proud team, part of the TAPS family. And we are going to take a quick break here on TFR on Jackalope Radio. Don't forget, you can join us on our website at tapsfamilyradio.net. We've got a chat room in there. You can come on in and ask questions, because we've got some great guests coming up that are going to follow up pretty much in step with what Michael was just talking about. And that's what that's why this show is going to be so interesting, because we're really going to start to get in deep here with how we need to focus more on the research part of things with our two guests coming up. We are so excited to have Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman coming up in just a bit. So stick close here. It's TFR.
South Coast Paranormal Tours. Dare to explore the unknown.
South Coast Paranormal Tours invites you to explore the haunted decks of the Star of India. We'll show you the paranormal hotspots, then we turn off the lights and let you be a part of your very own paranormal investigation.
Visit us online at scparanormaltours.com.
South Coast Paranormal Tours. Dare to explore the unknown.
The Taps family is truly international. If you live in the peninsula of Fife on the eastern border of Scotland and feel you may have a haunting, there's help. Scottish Paranormal, a proud Taps family member, is a scientific-based paranormal research team that is dedicated to the study of the unknown. Helping individuals, families, and business owners over the past 6 years, Scottish Paranormal is ready to help you. Their work is confidential and no charge for service will ever be asked of their clients. If you feel you need the help of Scottish Paranormal, then go to their website at www.scottish-paranormal.com. co.uk.
We'll be right back. to Leon Trotsky. He got an ice pick that made his ears burn. Whatever happened to you, dear old Lenny, the great Omira and Sancho Panza? Shakespeare's, they watch their own man.
With you, along with my co-host this evening, Larry Moore, who's been filling in for Chris Perkins, who is our usual co-host, but she is out this evening, so Larry has kindly stepped in. Again, we want to thank Michael Watson from the Oceanic Ghost Research Group out of Australia, our TAPS family team, in on our TAPS family segment this evening. Now, we are ready to get down and dirty. We are going to talk about things that are, I guarantee you, if my webcam was on, you would see me staring blankly at the wall, because this stuff is going to go right over my head, but in a good way. This is good stuff, all right? This is good stuff we're going to talk about, because we're going to talk about the hardcore science and research of the paranormal and some other stuff, too, that I'm very excited to be welcoming our guests this evening, Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman to Taps Family Radio. Marie and Larry, thank you guys so much for being with us tonight.
You are welcome.
Definitely. Thanks for having us.
Now, Marie, best-selling author, screenwriter, researcher, radio show host, and public speaker, and so busy that she has to be away from us in 40 minutes. She is the author of 2013, End of Days, or A New Beginning, Envisioning the World After the Events of 2012, and many, many other books. Larry, best-selling author, paranormal investigator, public speaker, scientific researcher, and screenwriter. Many popular books as well, including The Deja Vu Enigma and many others. Do you guys even find time to sleep?
What's that?
I've never slept in my entire life.
That's fantastic. No, and what I found when I was doing research for the show, I kept, you know, I was kind of putting together how I'm going to introduce you guys. And, well, I'll say Marie worked as author of this book. And then the more I read, I'm like, well, crap, she worked on that with Larry. Okay. I'm going to put Larry as the author of this book. And then it'd be like, oh, crap, he worked on this with Marie. So you guys work a lot together.
We do.
Yeah, we do. Yep.
Is that, do you find that's because, I mean, do you think alike, you know, and you guys have the same philosophy on things?
Yeah, I mean, we formed a partnership a couple of years ago. Actually, it's coming up on 3 years, I think. Yeah. And ever since then, excuse me, I mean, we have things that we do on our own. Larry has his organization, RPEST, and I have some things that I do on my own. But we decided to team up and write books and do research and just, you know, put our brains together, come up with theories. And then we got involved in writing a screenplay based on one of the books. And what I found, and then I'll let Larry speak, is that we're very, very similar, but there's also enough differences between us to keep it really interesting. Because I think if we were exactly the same, the partnership would be boring, and the work would be boring. There's a weird back and forth that we have going, and it's really good. Hopefully we can keep it that way. And
yeah, I think you know, like you said, there's got to be that bit of a difference. You know, otherwise, you got to challenge each other, especially when you're working this much together.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I was going to say, too, I completely agree with Marie. There's this symbiotic type relationship. I mean, we both bring things to the table that the other one may not be as strong in. I mean, Marie has talents that I don't have, and I have maybe a few that she doesn't have, although I find that hard to believe.
Can you tap dance? Can you?
No, actually, I do not tap dance.
Can you juggle?
I used to be able to. I haven't tried in a long time.
Well, then you just watch what you say.
Yeah, maybe. We both bring very different strengths to our partnership, and I think it's really worked out. We've written four books together, about to embark on our fifth book. We're staff writers for a couple of magazines. We write articles. We do ebooks, new media, pretty much anything you can think of, we're involved in. And I think that all probably, I think it comes together and it kind of meshes really well because our writing styles are very similar, which is, I think, is a huge positive. I mean, there's times where Marie will finish up something and send it to me to make some changes to and to clean up, or I'll do the same thing and I'll send it back to her. And we're both looking at the final product and we're kind of scratching our head saying, well, did you write this or did I write this? it's kind of gotten to the point where it's hard for even us to tell who's done what because we're so similar in that perspective. But yeah, it really works well. I think it's... you know, our books have gotten very wide acclaim. We're very well known for being able, both of us, being able to take extraordinarily complex topics and kind of regurgitate them in a more easily digestible manner so people can understand. We take, you know, very complex quantum physics concepts, for instance, and make it understandable to the layperson. Things, you know, where people don't feel like we're talking down to them. Right. Or we're talking above their level. So I think I think we have that special ability as well.
And speaking of the books you guys have worked on, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe is your latest one, The Trinity Secret. Is this the latest one that's been out there?
It's our latest one that's out there now. We actually just got a contract for our fifth book, which will be about time travel. Our latest one, and it'll be the scientific perspective on time travel, but the latest one that's out for distribution and purchase is The Trinity Secret, yeah.
Now, let's talk about that one a little bit. The Trinity Secret, The Power of Three, and The Code of Creation. And is it correct if I say, Christian believers of the Trinity, be aware before you buy this book? Is that safe to say?
Well, let me tell you something. One of the good things about Larry, Larry and I had not ever thought about partnering with anyone before. One of the things that really made this work is that we both have the same vision for what we want to do, not just with the paranormal field, but in general. And one part of that vision is that we don't want to shy away from controversy. So if we have theories and ideas that might be a little different, if we agree, hey, we're going to put this out there, we're going to deal with the consequences. Now, interestingly, I don't know about you, Larry, but I haven't gotten one negative email or feedback at all. Mm-mm. Because what we did is we took a symbol that is far older than Christianity, and we showed how it's everywhere. And I don't know how, if you were a Catholic, and I was raised Catholic, I don't know how you could be offended by that. I would think, if anything, you'd be, wow, this is really cool. There really is something to this symbol. It's a little bit different maybe from what I was taught in Sunday school, but it shows up everywhere.
Now, I don't think that it really is that controversial of a book. I mean, there's certainly a lot of things in there that might give a person kind of a second thought to what they learned in school. But, I don't think there's anything that's just so controversial that, we have to worry about, any type of a Salman Rushdie type situation.
We don't really offend. We don't offend anybody. Yeah. Our job is to present all of the research and then, tie it into a theory, which has gotten a really amazing response from people. It's also our first real foray into more metaphysics, a little bit of a self-help angle, because there's a lot in there about how the law of attraction works, how we create as human beings. So that was kind of interesting too. We were thinking, oh, I wonder how that's going to be received. And it's been really good. Really good.
Yeah. Now, Marie, you had said something about, the thing that some people might be surprised, especially if you were just familiar with the Trinity through the Christian aspect, is that the code, and the idea of three go way before Christianity. Exactly. Can you share some of that with us? Kind of, some of the stories you found while researching?
Well, the idea for this came when we were writing 1111, the time prompt phenomenon, because we were immersed in researching numbers for that book and the power of number and how mathematics was so important to ancient civilizations. Many ancient civilizations were brilliant when it came to mathematics, and they didn't have computers. They were doing all this stuff in their heads. So we kept finding three, and we thought, we need to revisit this later. And then we wrote the Deja Vu Enigma and the Resonance Key, and we finally had the opportunity to come back to, what is it about the number three? It's found in Hermetica. It's found in, ancient Sumerian and Babylonian, all of the Eastern traditions, Hindu, Buddhism, Confucius, Tao. It's everywhere, and that is because three represents something that is profound to everybody. It doesn't matter where you come from or what your background is.
And Larry, you got anything that you want to add to that?
No.
That's perfect. See, I just wanted to give you your chance, because I know you guys worked on the book together, so I wanted to make sure.
The only thing I'd really add to it was that this definitely was a different journey for me working on the book with Marie. Marie has much more of a metaphysical background than I do, and as far as from the metaphysical and religious aspect, my background is Judaism. I'm Jewish, so I had no conceptual understanding of the Trinity. I really didn't even I'd heard it, but I really had no idea what it even was.
Sure.
When we started actually doing the research for the book, I mean, it was absolutely fascinating. I found things out about even in my own religion that there's a concept of Trinity that pretty much applies as well, and that basically, as Marie said, all major religions have some type of a concept of a Trinity, and I was wholly unaware of that. So, you know, writing the book to me was as much of an educational experience as it was anything else. It was very interesting, and I think if nothing else, individuals that purchase and read the book, I think would find it to be very enlightening from that perspective, that they would learn a lot of things about religion, a lot of things about, like Marie said, self-help, a lot of things that you don't get from going to Sunday school, and you certainly don't get from you certainly wouldn't get it from exposure to one religion only.
Right. Right. Well, let me ask you guys this then, along dealing with the number three and how it seems to be in all forms of faith and religion now. Going back to the book you guys worked on, you know, the time prompt phenomena, not so much time, but the number three and your research of numbers. Is the number three one of the big powerful numbers out there?
I would say it is the most powerful. And again, it is because it is the perfect number. We as human beings do not like duality. We don't like opposites, dark, light, good, evil. We're always looking for something to unify the duality, and that's what the number three does. It's called the perfect number because it is the unifier. It's called the great unifier. And it also contains within it, you know, as we found out, this very simple code whereby something is created out of nothing. You know, it's a very simple three-part process. We use it as human beings. Whatever made us use the same process. And it is really described in so many different religions that it's shocking once you look into it. And I know that this is true for a lot of symbols. The cross is not just a Christian symbol. The dove, you know, symbols are understood by all people. They're very archetypal. But the Trinity, I always thought, when I was young, you know, this is just a Catholic thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really cool because Larry and I, and here's the thing, you know, Larry and I don't really like to write books about stuff that's going to bore us because the research is, it's tedious. So if we're learning stuff like, oh, wow, cool, you know, I didn't know that. Hey, great. That makes it more exciting for us. And then we put our passion and excitement into the book. And we've been told by a lot of people that they really feel like we get just as much of a kick out of writing the books as they do out of reading them.
And is that true?
I mean, this time travel one is kind of intimidating me. I started doing some research last night and I'm like, oh my God. And then I thought, you know, this is really cool because Larry and I like to go off in different directions so that we can expand what we're talking about, what we're writing about, what we're teaching about, what we're lecturing about.
Well, you know, and the thing to me, Marie, all of the books that we've written, even though they seem to be completely different as far as what they're about, if you really think about it, it all comes down to basically the same thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's what's so great about what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, all of the, you know, whether it's psychology, whether it's resonance, whether it's the paranormal, whether it's UFOs, whatever the hell it is that we're writing about, it all seems to have, I mean, we seem to kind of stay within the mysterious field,
right.
I guess I would say.
The unknown.
Yeah, the stuff that we're like totally interested in.
Yeah, and that's true. And I think, you know, I think people in the paranormal field that are very ghost oriented kind of look at us funny sometimes, like, well, yeah. I don't know. They say they're paranormal, but they're writing about all this weird stuff. And yet, if any book of ours that you read, I think the Trinity, we maybe only touched on it, but the Deja Vu Enigma, the Time Resonance Key, definitely. There's a lot of paranormal references and applications to things like ghosts and UFOs and parallel universes and all of this stuff. So I think what we're doing is really trying to push that outside of the envelope more and more and more, yet stay within the realm of the unknown.
If you're just joining us this evening, Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman are our guests this evening on Taps Family Radio. And I know now that Larry Moore, the other Larry of the show, my co-host this evening, had a question. Larry, go ahead, my friend.
Well, you know, it's kind of what I mentioned in chat a second ago, Tim. Sometimes I forget that I'm supposed to ask a question because Marie...
Yeah, where have you been?
Well, you guys are so interesting to listen to. I just sit here all, you know, Google-eyed like, oh, wow. You know, and so I forget sometimes that I'm supposed to, you know, ask things. And one thing that I want to know, you know, with most of your books and most of the research that you guys do, there's a lot of talk about metaphysics and how it applies to the paranormal. And Marie, my favorite book on the paranormal and stuff like that that you wrote, Science, How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science May Explain the Existence of Paranormal Phenomena, which is an excruciatingly long title.
I know, isn't that awful?
But, you know, it's completely, I mean, it's a good title. I love the book. I've read it more times than I can count. With so many theories out there with the way that metaphysics and M and string theory apply into the paranormal, how do you guys feel that that would kind of mix in with the whole time travel thing coming up with your new book?
Believe it or not, it does. And what we found is that there are, you know, now there's this new idea that things like ghosts, aliens, cryptids are time travelers, not necessarily ghosts in terms of, you know, a dead person's spirit. We may be looking at time travelers. We may be looking at entities coming from other dimensions, parallel universes, and other times. So, yeah, we're definitely going to talk about that in one of the chapters where we get into the more, the less quote-unquote scientific, because when it comes to time travel, everything is theoretical at this point.
Right.
But, you know, we will have one chapter where we really are able to get out there. And our publisher was okay with that because we were a little bit concerned. We thought, you know, we want to talk about some of the more unusual aspects of time travel, and we got the go-ahead to do that. So we will definitely cover that new theory that everybody keeps talking about.
And along those lines, too, Larry, one of the books that that you read, and we actually talked about this last time you were on Taps Family Radio, is The Resonance Key, Exploring the Links Between Vibration, Consciousness, and Zero-Point Grid. You guys have something about long titles. And
yeah,
ask our publisher. Do you want to know why they do that? I will teach you a marketing.
Yeah.
Keywords. The more words that you cram into your title and subtitle, the more people will possibly stumble across the title of your book with keywords.
Ah,
so resonance. If they look up consciousness, if they look up vibration, if they look up resonance, if they look up zero point field or zero point energy, they're going to possibly stumble across our book.
See, it's all about PR and marketing somewhere in one way or the other.
Yeah.
Now, Larry, going back to that book, though, and again, when you explained it on our show last time, I was just completely amazed by the theory that's behind that and the idea of, you know, if you can real quick explain again, you know, the idea of the vibration and what that can do to the human eye and possibly, you know, help form what we're seeing. Do you see any of that coming into play in your new book coming up?
In time travel?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I think resonance probably, I think it probably will definitely play a part somewhat. I'm not totally sure how yet, but I'm sure, you know, it seems like from our research, resonant frequencies and resonance as a whole basically has kind of a hand in everything.
Well, I think
I mean, that's a really good question. I imagine it probably will. Marie, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I was just reading Michio Kaku's book last night about he wrote just a chapter on time travel. And I was really surprised at how often he mentions ripping space-time. Yeah. And one of the ways of doing, you know, obviously we are not advanced enough to do that. But, you know, one of the theories is that you are using a particular frequency or vibrational force, whatever, to rip something open in time and space big enough to create a wormhole and then make that a sustainable wormhole. And, you know, hopefully we'll explain all the science in the book. But I think, like Larry said, one of the things that he and I are doing, that Larry and I are doing, is trying to find the theory of everything. Only we're not doing it from the angle of, you know, being a physicist or a scientist. We're doing it from over here on the quote-unquote paranormal end, yet also finding a way that, you know, it can be embraced by science as well. And I think resonance, vibration, everything vibrates. Everything has a resonant frequency. Now, if that is the case, if we could learn how to manipulate those resonant frequencies, we should be able to do a whole lot of crazy things.
I'm sitting here, you're exactly right. But even from a historical perspective, if some things like the Philadelphia experiment, for instance, were actually true, where they were able to manipulate magnetic fields like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the phenomenal, if that actually ends up being a true account. Of course, there's a lot of controversy involved in that, but the concept of it is fairly solid. But as far as the science behind it, whether they were actually able to pull it off or not, that's kind of a whole different thing. But yeah, I think Murray said, you know, the rips in space-time, resonant frequencies or resonant... the ability of resonance possibly to hold open a wormhole. If you can find the resonant frequency of the opening or something, perhaps you can use that to manipulate that and then travel through the wormhole. I think it will probably play a part for sure.
Very interesting. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this new project you guys are working on. And speaking of which, can we talk about the movie 19, the one you guys were working on? Yeah, can we talk about that one yet? Is that still kind of under wraps?
It's under wraps only because it's in pre-production, but what we can say is that it's in pre-production.
And okay.
It's based on... Now, it's a science fiction, you know, horror, paranormal film, so it is fiction, but it's based on the research that Larry and I did in the resonance key. And, you know, Larry can probably explain a lot better the idea of the ghost frequency.
Yeah. Can I tell him the secret about the movie?
What secret?
There's a secret. Now you got us all intrigued. You can't share it now, Larry.
I understand from a fairly reputable source that Charlie Sheen's agent has contacted us, willing to work for free and appear.
That's right. Charlie. Yes, winning. Charlie.
Are you being serious on this one?
No, I'm totally.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding?
No, it's his torpedo of truth tour isn't going so well.
Oh my god, Larry, you had me going there for a second.
Well, you know, hey Marie, I didn't get you on April 1st, so that consider that my April 1st gift.
Oh, all right. Well, I need to cook something up for you then. But here's the deal. There's a producer director. We have a sound designer. We have a special effects team. We have all the elements are being put into place. I have nothing to do with the financing. That's a whole separate thing. Larry and I have been a little bit involved in the casting. So we've come up with some young up and coming actors and actresses that we thought the producer director could approach. So, and you know, it's a slow, agonizing process. But the thing is, it's like once you get the go ahead, once you get the green light, then boom, the movie can be made in like 8 weeks. So, yeah, it's exciting. And we're already thinking of a sequel.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
very cool.
We're very savvy now. We left the ending sequel ready. You know, got to leave those endings open for a sequel.
Well, very excited. I look forward to seeing that finished product when it does end. Speaking of ending, let's switch gears here a little bit. And Marie, this kind of goes along with your book, 2013, End of Days or a New Beginning. So, what's the deal here? Did the Mayans did the Mayans just get bored and stop working on their calendar, or come that date, is the world go dark and existence as we know it is over with? What's going to happen?
You know what? At the exact moment that it turns to December 21st, 2012, we're all going to die.
I knew it.
The most violent, fiery, I don't know how, maybe ask. No, I'm just kidding. You know, it's, again, and it's funny because Larry's speaking on this this weekend.
This weekend.
Yeah. And it's obviously everything is escalating as we get closer to 2012, but the amount of misinformation, disinformation, BS, misinterpretation, and just total lack of education out there on every aspect of this enigma, it just boggles my mind.
Yeah.
And that's why I wrote the book. And the funny thing is that Larry and I were just starting to decide to work together when I wrote the book, so he helped me out with a lot of the research. And now we're being approached a lot to talk about this and how does it fit in with the paranormal and blah, blah, blah. It's only going to get worse. But the Mayans were brilliant when it came to making astronomical observations, mathematics, whatnot. These were also very brutal, primitive people. Okay, they sacrificed human beings. But just like our calendar, they believed in cycles. Everything operated in cycles because they were very observant of nature, of the skies and the stars and the rising of the sun and the moon and the plants and, you know, when animals were available and when they weren't, when they could hunt and when they weren't, blah, 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 that everything was cyclical, just like it is for us. Now, why is it that our calendar can end on December 31st of one year and then cycle back to January 1st of another? Why wouldn't anybody else think of that? You know?
Right, right.
It's the end of a cycle and the beginning of a new one. Now, for the Mayans, that was very symbolic. But we have to remember that their symbolism, what was important to them, was important to them. It may not apply to those of us who live thousands of years later.
Now, first of all, real quick, Larry, you had said you're going to be speaking on this weekend. Where are you going to be speaking at?
There's a conference in Jefferson, Texas called History, Haunts, and Legends, and I'm one of the keynote speakers at it. So, should be interesting. I know they'll have some pretty good speakers there. Nick Redfern will be one of them. Dr. Rita Louise, me. They've got a couple of good speakers. Should be interesting.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, and I got to believe, and like you said, Marie, you know, between now and December of 2012, more and more people are going to be speaking on this, and there's going to be more and more misinformation out there. Now, a funny story, a couple years ago, I had a chance to go to Cancun, Mexico, and one of the things I did was I took the tour bus over to Chichen Itza and got to see the Mayan ruins there.
Lucky you.
Yeah, it was fascinating. It was absolutely fascinating. And what made it even more fascinating was the fact that the guide on our bus, and he was actually our guide through the ruins. He is actually a full-blooded Mayan. He is from the tribes that still live there.
Right. And
so he knew. He had all the facts. He had everything down. I mean, we were getting the stories the way people should be hearing them. And just for the heck of it, and I should have known better, but, you know, it's a long ride from our hotel to the ruins.
What did you do?
And so I actually raised my hand because he's letting people ask questions. And I was stupid enough to bring up, hey, so is there any truth to this Mayan calendar, 2012 December thing? I thought he was going to throw me off the bus. He just looked at me like I was an absolute idiot. And I explained to him afterwards. I'm like, you know, I don't want you to think that I'm a believer in that. I was trying to pass time. It was hot. I was sweating. I wanted to make conversation. But, even the Mayans, even the tribes that are there today don't believe in the Hollywood version of this.
You know what? Do we live our lives according to Greek mythology? According to Norse mythology? Why the hell would we interpret literally Mayan mythology? I don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't take being a rocket scientist to figure out that this is their mythology. There may be some truths embedded in it. And yeah, a whole lot of bad stuff's going to happen in the next year or two. It's going to happen anyway, regardless of whether the Mayans ever existed or not. But that's their mythology. And I think we're doing them a real disrespect and a disservice by turning it into a very Judeo-Christian apocalyptic idea when it wasn't.
Yeah, and that's exactly how he kind of explained it to me too. He kind of made it that in that point. So yeah, point well taken for sure.
Yep. Then again, we may all die, and then I get all these emails the next day. I'll be dead. I won't be able to answer them. But you know, I told you so. I told you so.
Exactly. Larry Moore, you had a question, hey bud?
I did. One thing I wanted to kind of bring up, and I know it kind of changes gears a little bit. Larry, you are the president and senior researcher for the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies team. And Marie, you're also the director of special projects. So you guys have a direct involvement in, you know, the paranormal field, aside from writing books and screenplays and all the fantastic work you guys do. But, you know, getting down to the basics of the paranormal field itself, there's a lot of talk about where the field's going, and some say it's going in a negative way. Some say that, you know, it's becoming too commercialized and whatnot. What do you guys think needs to happen in the future to make the paranormal field stronger and better, and you know, the research more, what's the word?
Legitimate?
Yes, legitimate. Pleasing. I was way off target on that one.
Right.
But yes, legitimate. I mean, the research being more legitimate, what do you think needs to happen in the future?
Go for it, Larry.
Gosh. Well, I'm going to try to stay off the soapbox and try not to...
Preach away, Brother Larry. Preach away.
Brother Larry.
I really don't want to piss anyone off on this show.
Come on.
All right, well, let me just... Yes, I do run a paranormal group. It's one of the larger ones in the country. We have a tremendous amount of equipment and funding and a lot of really neat toys to play with. But the work that Marie and I do, I use RPAST as kind of the testing ground for a lot of the research concepts and a lot of the theoretical stuff that we come up with. I take it back to my group, and we use our equipment to try to validate, invalidate, verify, debunk concepts that we come up with. I don't see that being done any other place besides my group. There's not a lot, to me, there's a lot of problems in the paranormal field. A lot of problems. Beyond the drama and the backstabbing, I'm talking about framework issues within the field itself. There is really no concept of peer review that is followed with any type of structure at all. Most groups, it seems like, have this very confrontational attitude where it's my evidence. I'm going to slap my copyright logo on it, and don't you do anything with it.
Amen. Amen, brother.
You know, that to me is that's a huge negative, and that's a huge detractor of the field. And mm-hmm. if you look at traditional legitimate science as a comparison for the model for paranormal research, paranormal research is a joke. I mean, it's mom and pops. There's no structure. There's absolutely no governing, if you will. I mean, I really hate to use that term, but there's really not. There's no standardization. You know, look, we don't even know what it is that we're actually studying. There are so many possibilities as far as what it is that we're looking at. You know, are we even an integral part of what it is that we're trying to study? And I don't see any other groups out there that are really thinking. There are a few, okay? There's a few groups that I know of that are doing it. But as a whole, the field, that's not being done. Most groups, you know, what they see on TV is pretty much gospel to them. You know, they see their favorite paranormal para-celebrity walking around with their K2 meter and talking on an investigation and, you know, show me a sign that you're here. Well, there's really not a whole lot of science to it, but... You know, Joe Jim Bob that watches that on TV and then has declared himself a paranormal investigator, then goes out, trains his team that's how you conduct a paranormal investigation. And, you know, really there's not a whole lot of good evidence. So not only are there not a lot of good theories that are out there, I mean, really people keep regurgitating the same crap, it seems like, but there's also not a lot of really good field research that's being done, in my opinion. Now, I mean, you know, take that for what it's worth, that and a, you know, $1.50 will buy you a Starbucks, maybe. But, you know, I'm fairly well connected within the paranormal field, so I kind of have a lot of contacts, and I kind of see what other groups are doing. And, you know, that to me, those are probably the two biggest problems. I mean, there's lots of problems in the paranormal field, like I said, but those to me are probably, you know, we need to think outside the box. And that's just really not happening. People are so focused on getting the next TV show or, you know, getting their name out there and, you know, having their paranormal group be, you know, in the neon light. And it's really, I mean, if that's what you're about, okay, fine, that's cool. You know, if that's your motivation. But if you really are looking for answers, you really want to know what it is that we're looking for, what we're looking at, then you got to do things different, and that's just not being done.
Yeah. Now, well, right? Sorry, Larry, go ahead.
Well, you know, and I feel that I could not agree with you more. There's a lot of good teams out there that are trying new things and trying new techniques and doing the research, and I feel that it's an insult to the ones who are trying when, like you said, these mom-and-pop groups who are basing their research and their team off of what they see on TV shoot them down and say that they're stupid or they don't know what they're talking about or, you know, that's a ridiculous idea. And it just makes it hard for the rest of us. And kind of what we were talking about with Michael Watson was, you know, the television and the media of the paranormal has a positive effect in the beginning, but now it has,
right,
in my opinion,
right. Yeah, absolutely,
a negative effect that now everybody's using that as the handbook of paranormal investigating. And
right.
It's like we're sitting in place spinning our wheels.
Right.
Yeah. And also, I mean, when did the paranormal become only about ghosts? You know,
exactly.
I mean, it boggles my mind because I'm not a PhD, but I have a really good understanding of a lot of the different sciences, whether you're talking about geology or anthropology or climate science or seismology, and every single one of those fields has something to offer in the way of a theory as to explain the paranormal. Now, why are so many of these groups not even educated in the slightest bit in science,
right,
the
right.
known, but they're off chasing the unknown? It's like, come right. on, first you need a foundation.
Well, all right.
But we think we know, right, Larry?
Absolutely, and here's the deal. There are no experts in the paranormal, okay? None. If anyone tells you they're an expert, run very quickly. There are, you know, there are people in the field that I think are knowledgeable in certain areas. Like I think Marie is, you know, she has her head on straight about quantum physics and about resonance, you know, same as me, but I would never say that I was an expert. Marie's not an expert. If anyone tells you they're an expert, run. And
right.
I run into a lot of experts at conferences and things that I speak at. And, you know, it really bothers me. These people are, you know, portraying themselves as the be-all, end-all of the paranormal and that they know everything. So then they go and they say, well, this is the way it is. And just like what we were talking about these mom-and-pop groups, I mean, you know, it's a real dichotomy. And there's a lot of issues in the paranormal. And there's so much territorialism and there's just so much it's like a gigantic pissing contest for some reason. And you don't really see that in real science. You do to a certain extent, but for the most part, you don't. And I don't know why this field happens to be so segregated like that, how it seems like. Let me give you, here's a perfect example, all right? Tell me what you think about this. We were contacted by a historic, I'm not going to say the names, but we were contacted by a historic location in Memphis, Tennessee to go investigate. Okay. This was cool, you know, great. We'll travel to Memphis. It's a 3-hour drive from where we're based. Not a big deal at all. Certainly sounded like something fun. So I had our case manager set up the date. Everything was fine. I get an email less than 24 hours after we had that investigation scheduled from a group from Memphis, Tennessee, telling me that we cannot do investigations in their city
without
their permission.
Oh,
clear okay. investigation with them before we can come into their city and do a paranormal investigation. You know, my 2-letter reply back to the guy was F you. No,
sadly, Larry, and I've heard of that even in my own state of Michigan.
I experienced it.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you must have balls the size of Boulder to do something like that. I mean,
or
really
a brain the size of your balls.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, really, Marie, could you imagine a legitimate scientist saying you can't talk about quantum physics unless, you know?
Or I'm sorry, you can't research the sun because I am, and I have dibs on it. Man, it's
yeah,
so
exactly.
juvenile. It's like, you know, it's not even junior high school. It's like grade school behavior.
Right.
You know, this is our corner. You can't come here.
Yeah.
But, it's clickish.
That's just one example. I mean, there's just so much crap in the field. That's why, you know, it's so frustrating to me, probably to Marie, I think, to a certain extent as well. It's so frustrating the paranormal, because it does. It's like we're spinning our wheels, and there is so much of this stuff that's going on. It's like just when you think you might be making some headway in something, then something happens.
Right. Here's the thing, and you know, the old saying, history repeats itself. And anyone who's a student of history, which I am, the field of the paranormal and of ghosts went through this once before, and it was called the Age of Spiritualism back in the 30s and the 40s with the Harry Prices. And then and during that time, you know, everyone was a psychic and everyone could make a table move, you know, and it hurt the field. But what happened is once the dust settled and it all went away, the true researchers were still there. And I believe history is repeating itself, and that's exactly where we are today. We're in that stage again, and eventually the dust will settle and the true researchers will still be there.
Yeah, those that are not out there for the social fun aspect of it only.
Right.
But let me throw a kink into that. I think that you're probably right, but the age that we're in now with the internet, with television, with streaming, Wi-Fi, WiMAX, with the amount of communication that we have, we're able to reach a much, much broader segment of society. And there, you know, we're getting to hit people across all different socioeconomic, religious, all of those different levels of people. So, you know, for as many people that drop out of the field, it seems like to me there's just as many new people. You know, every time I turn around, there's a new paranormal group in my state. I live in Arkansas, which is a fairly small state. We have probably no less than probably at least 30 paranormal groups. And granted, I mean, a lot of them are little mom and pops, but, you know, for a state the size of Arkansas to have 30 paranormal groups.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and the thing is, how long has this been going on? And how come nobody still has any clue what a ghost is? I mean, it's been going on for, what, 150 years?
At least.
Now with thousands and thousands and thousands of groups, we still don't have – we have a lot of data, but not enough theory. And that's one of the things Larry and I have talked about. There are not enough groups that are willing to sit down half the time and think and talk and theorize and come up with ideas, because that's boring. That's not as much fun as going ghost.
Not only that, a lot of the groups just don't have the basic scientific principles.
Well, exactly.
I mean, you know, basic science 101 type stuff. Right. You know, what's an ion? What's a neutron? What's an electron? You know, really, really basic stuff. I mean, if you can't understand really basic things, then how the hell are you going to understand more difficult conceptual type theories?
Well, right.
If
you don't understand our laws of physics, how could you possibly speculate as to their laws of physics if they're operating on under different laws? I mean, that basic education of just the sciences really makes me crazy.
Now, let me just throw this out there real quick, Marie, because I know you guys have to get going. You know, and do you think, because I know you worked with MUFON, does MUFON have it right? They seem to have a centralized group that kind and I know, Larry, you were saying you don't really think we need to be governed. That's not the right word. But it seems like MUFON kind of has the right idea. Is that something the paranormal field should look after?
I was in MUFON for a long time. I loved it. I haven't been in for years, but I know, okay, they have a very strict testing that you have to take to become a field investigator. Mm-hmm. There is a sort of hierarchy that you have to climb through to prove yourself, if that's still the case, and I think it is. MUFON is very organized. They have a central headquarters, you know, usually within your state, even within your city, there's going to be a headquarter MUFON group. They're very organized. And you know what? Even with all the UFO shows and stuff, they're not out there for the glamour. They're chasing theories and ideas about UFOs.
Yeah, and that's what I've always been fascinated, how the UFO field seems to have done it the right way.
I'll tell you why. The difference is you can't make a lot of TV shows about UFO chasers, because UFO chasers go after the fact. After a sighting, they go and they interview, they look for physical clues. Ghost hunters, you're in the present. So, yeah, it makes for good TV. That is the only thing that I think separates the two, from one being a sort of media circus and the other being a bunch of people that are really serious about what they're doing.
Very good point.
Beyond that, too, Marie, I think the extraterrestrial aspect is something that legitimate science takes much, much more seriously than they do the paranormal.
Hey, if the Pope is talking about it, you know?
Yeah. You're starting to see more and more more and more things come out from, you know, NASA, things,
right.
things that actually, you know, may lead to disclosure, that, you know, you don't see the same type of embracing as far as the paranormal side of things, too. I mean,
right.
it's still very fringe in comparison. You know, extraterrestrial stuff, absolutely, it's still fringe. But it's a lot more accepted, I think, than the paranormal. The thing to me that, that kind of sticks out about MUFON stuff versus paranormal stuff is, yeah, I think they did get some stuff right. But within the paranormal, like we were talking about before, there are these mom and pops that are out there. You know, everyone has their own opinion of how things should run. You know, in the extraterrestrial side of things, your personal biases, your religious upbringing, your who you are really doesn't affect the investigation. That's much more of a physical evidence type thing.
Whereas, and they have a manual that they operate off of.
Well, yeah, but the paranormal is much more of a personal experiential thing,
right, right.
much more than anything else. You can't really quantify it the same that you can with the extraterrestrial stuff. But beyond that, you know, could you imagine the outcry from the paranormal community if all of a sudden a set of guidelines were put in place and you tried making these people mom and pops that can barely afford, you know, little cheap A2 meters, you know, saying that now you have to purchase, and if you want to be in the paranormal, you have to use a triaxial EMF meter, or you have to purchase a FLIR B2.
That's
just wouldn't happen. Nobody would go for that. You really would never get any kind of consensus of anyone saying, "Well, I'll join in on that."
Right. Exactly. Man, Marie and Larry, thank you guys so much. I think we've even kept you longer than you were supposed to be here. And
we
just scratched the surface of wanting to talk to you guys. So you guys, I hope you guys will come back to TFR some night.
Oh, we'll see part two.
Yes, for sure. Ladies first, Marie, what's the website people can find you at?
They can learn all about us at paraexplorers.com, and that's PAREXPLORERS, so paraexplorers.com. We have our personal sites, too. Larry's is rpast.org, ARPAST.org. Mine is MarieDJones.com.
All right, there you go. Marie Jones, Larry Flaxman, thank you guys so much for being with us.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Thanks. Have a great night. We are going to take a quick break.
When you feel there's nowhere you can turn, we're here to help. The Southern Paranormal and Anomaly Research Society. We're a proud TAPS family member with chapters in Mississippi, Georgia, and South Carolina. Our dedicated team of investigators is ready to assist you. With professionalism and the utmost discretion, we'll help you understand what you've been experiencing. The Southern Paranormal and Anomaly Research Society. Because at times like this, you don't simply need proof. You need answers. For more information, visit us on the web at www.spars-paranormal.com.
When you need to know what goes bump in the night, contact the Wausau Paranormal Research Society, serving the entire state of Wisconsin. Investigations are free of charge and completely confidential. You'll receive objective, scientific analysis of the activity in your home. The goal is to provide you with a rational explanation for what you're seeing or hearing. The Wausau Paranormal Research Society, where the paranormal and reality meet. To schedule an investigation, visit WPRS.net.
And welcome back to TAPS Family Radio. It is Tim Ellis and Larry Moore with you. Thank you for being with us tonight here, my friends, on TFR. And we are getting ready to wrap things up here. We just got about 10 minutes left here. But Larry, first we want to do something that we like to call mailbag here, my friends. We got a couple questions from people who can send in their emails. And they can do that, too. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here, my friend. The email is for mailbag?
Mailbag is TFR, I guess, it's TF Radio Promotions at gmail.com.
That's the
TAPS Family Radio email. You can send all your email or your mailbag questions and any suggestions or comments about the show. So,
all righty, very good. So that's where you can go ahead and email your questions to. And here's a couple good questions here tonight. One, do you feel There is not enough actual research being done in the paranormal field. And this is a great question. This one comes from Stacy out of Ohio. And this is a great one because it just goes hand in hand with what we're talking about here tonight. Larry, if you want to start on that one, go ahead.
You know, Larry Flaxman, I'll tell you, the guy hit the nail on the head. Well, you know, we were just talking about that exact same thing. And I think it's, you know, there's a lot of teams out there that are trying to do the right research and trying to learn more about the field and, you know, the paranormal and everything that goes under the huge umbrella of the word paranormal, you know, because that doesn't just exclusively mean ghosts and ghost hunting or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a wide range of subjects that fall under that name. And I think it's difficult for those teams to get that research done and do the right thing and do what we're out here to do, because ghost hunting and paranormal investigating has taken such a mainstream turn, you know, with television and radio and all this, you know, media, that we're overlooking what we're really trying to do. And I think Larry Flaxman really nailed it when he said, you know, everyone's trying to be on TV, or they have this ghost hunting 101 book that they got off TV. And I don't feel that that there's as much research that should be done. I mean, you go back until, you know, the 20s and 30s, whenever, you know, paranormal investigating was going on compared to now. You know, I mean, well, we'll even go back 20 years. We'll go back to the 90s when paranormal investigating was going on compared to now. We have so many more resources and available tools and knowledge than we did 20 years ago, but yet we really haven't made that much more progress than we already had.
Yeah.
And I think it's because everybody's just, you know, trying to be on TV and trying to, you know, have fun and hop fences and go into cemeteries and do all the things that you're really not supposed to do.
Right.
Rather than sit down and do the work and try to find some answers for that we all seek.
Yeah, very good point. Now, what I find very interesting, though, is what we have at our fingertips these days with all the technology we have. If you actually go back to one of the founding fathers in our field, you know, he's considered the father of ghost hunting. And, of course, I'm talking about Hans Holzer. And, you know, had a chance to interview his daughter a few times, Alexandra. And she'll flat out tell you, you know, her dad would so not be into what we're doing these days. Because as far as Hans Holzer was concerned, all you needed for an actual paranormal investigation was a trusty recorder and a trusty psychic, and that's all Hans ever wanted in the field. And that actually brings us right into our next question here today. This one here comes from Steve from Maine. He says, do you feel there are too many money-making gadgets being pushed onto paranormal groups, i.e. tools that aren't actually very useful, but, you know, everyone wants the bells and whistles and the bright lights, you know? And that's, I think that's a great question, because I'll tell you this much. I do believe there is, to a point. I believe there are a lot of gadgets out there that really don't add much to what we're doing. Now, can you use them as just more ways of gathering evidence? Yeah, absolutely. But what I don't like about them is the prices they are coming out with.
Oh, yeah. You can buy, if I'm not mistaken, the last time I checked, was the PX box, which is a gimmicky little tool that is for clearly entertainment. You know, I'm sure you know it. You know, you take the box in and it spouts out little words.
Right, right.
That supposedly, you know, a spirit manipulates or whatever.
Right.
Those things run for like $265.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not even legitimate forms of it doesn't even do what it says it's going to do. Well, I mean, well, I'll take that back. It does exactly what it says it's going to do. It's for entertainment. But people are using that as research tools and investigating tools and claiming that whatever it's doing is evidence.
Yeah, it's like the digital age of the Ouija board when we were kids. You know, Parker Brothers made the Ouija
exactly.
board, for God's sake. So,
exactly.
Yeah. So, again, I think, you know, go ahead.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, you can stick with the most basic of tools. You know, when the Northeast Oklahoma Research Society, you know, my team, when we got started, and, you know, I get this question a lot on my show was, you know, what did you guys start out with? We started out with the simplest of stuff, digital recorders, one of the old Sony Hi-8s, a pad of paper, a pen, and some flashlights.
Exactly. Exactly. I so agree that, you know, when we first began, you know, back in 2000, we all had notepad and paper. And to this day, I still tell my team to bring them, because the thought and the hope is that if something amazing happens, you can remember to write it down right away so you don't forget by the time you get back to wherever to write it down. But yeah, you just need the basics, and the basics will get you through. Now, with that being said, you do have folks out there like Larry Flaxman, who his team and many other teams out there are doing some amazing things with some amazing equipment out there. So it's kind of a catch-22. But what I don't like, and what we mentioned, is the pricing. I think there's a lot of people getting ripped off with these gadgets.
Yeah, and you know, just paranormal investigating in itself is a very expensive hobby. And what I think a lot of people that are wanting to get involved in the field don't realize is it doesn't pay very well.
Right.
You know, we don't get paid to do this.
No, not at all.
We're throwing our own money, and whenever, you know, equipment costs hundreds and hundreds of dollars,
yeah,
and you have to buy that not knowing whether it actually works or not.
Yep.
That's the big thing, is that there's so many unanswered questions and there's so many open ends in the paranormal. How do you know that all these pieces of equipment with the bells and whistles and the lights and the buzzers and all that stuff, how do you even know that they work at all?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so why not stick with the basics of something that has worked over, you know, many, many years?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
start out that way.
You got it. So buyer beware and be smart. Once again, real quick, Larry, for people who want to submit to mailbag, what's the email?
It is tfradiopromotions@gmail.com.
Okay. If you ever have a question you want to hear on the show and have us answer it, just send it to that email. Larry, once again, my man, thank you so much for filling in.
Thank you for having me, man. I had a great time.
All right, there we go. That is Larry Moore, who is actually works behind the scenes for us. Our show coming up on April 19th. If you love, you know, the whole thing about the Wolfman and the Dog Man and you know, the movie that just came out not too long ago, Red Riding Hood, which didn't fare too well at the box office. If you love your Jacob from Twilight, get ready for our show coming up on April 19th. We have a great author coming on with us, Linda Godfrey, who has written many books on the Michigan Dogman, the werewolf, the legend of the American werewolf, and we've got her on coming up on April 19th. Once again, thank you folks for listening to us here at TFR, because if you weren't listening, we couldn't do what we do. Live from Jackalope Radio, good night from Taps Family Radio.
You've been listening to Taps Family Radio, the safest place in the paranormal world. Join us every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, 4 Mountain, and 3 Pacific on the new home for Taps Family Radio, Jackalope Radio.